This podcast is part of Heal at Home Moms. Erin and I are two doctors of physical therapy, and we created this online program of exercise and education to help moms know how to heal their own bodies after they have a baby. So you can learn more at healathomemoms.com, and you can save 30% on the program with the discount code MOMCAST30. That's MOMCAST30, all caps. So, I want to know how to pronounce your first name. I'm so sorry.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to guess first.
I'm sure you get that all the time. I was, to Tyler, I was like, Grian, I don't know.
So it's Irish for Grace, but it's pronounced Gronya, so it's like G-R-O-N-Y-A or I-A as phonetically speaking, but it's Gronya.
Gronya, okay. So I'm here with Gronya Donnelly today, and she is a physiotherapist who specializes in pelvic floor and diastasis, and she is from Northern Ireland. So thank you for being with us, Gronya.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, so, and by the way, I've been to Ireland twice, and I absolutely loved it. My maiden name is McLaughlin, so I had to come back to some heritage.
Oh, you're definitely Irish.
Yeah, so I've always loved Ireland. Both were wonderful trips. But I recently found about you from a webinar with Janice with my pelvic floor muscles. We're ambassadors for them, and I love the stuff that they're doing. And it was really wonderful to do that webinar and learn some new things about diastasis. And so I'm so happy to have you here to speak about that.
Thank you.
So what a lot of my listeners know is that I have diastasis through my three children. Actually, after my first, it developed. But I had six finger widths after my second child. And it's done really well, and I've been able to heal it really well. But that just has, of course, furthered my passion for the subject. And I feel like this is an area, I don't know if it's global, but definitely here in the States, that's very underserved and misunderstood.
I totally agree. It's the same here in the UK and Ireland. And it's interesting because I'm sure you can relate to this, Jenna, but when I follow a lot of people in my line of work who are interested in pelvic health and interested in diastasis. So mm-hmm. I can become quite tunnel vision to thinking that everybody in the world knows about diastasis and we're getting the message out there, until I meet another client coming into my clinic who's finally managed to find someone to help.
Yeah.
And they tell the usual story of maybe asking their care provider about this gap in their tummy, or that they think they have abdominal separation, and they get told that it's just cosmetic, or that it's a normal part of pregnancy, and or that it has no implications on their function. And that really, really just gets to me. So we have so much more to do to improve the care for women.
Yes, absolutely. And that's a great point that you just brought up, is the fact that people are, well, first of all, like you said, most people don't even know that this exists still. Mm-hmm. They just know that when they try to do crunches to make their tummy go back after babies, it's not working, basically, is the only thing they know. And so they therefore give up, or there's a lot of fear associated with this, which we can talk about in a second. But I'd love to discuss the fact that, like you said, that it's not only cosmetic.
Totally.
So for people out there, so let's start with diastasis. You want to tell us what diastasis is and kind of some of the functional implications of it that you have found to be true?
Sure. So diastasis, or diastasis rectus abdominis, or diastasis recti, there's lots of different names for it out there, and it basically just describes the thinning and widening of the linea alba, which is a piece of connective tissue that joins the two muscle bellies of the rectus abdominis muscle at the center in the midline. And the rectus abdominis muscle, for anyone who isn't sure about the different muscles, it's the one that we tend to think of as our six-pack muscle. And so common sense will tell us that when we are pregnant and we have a growing bump, that all the muscles and connective tissue in the abdominal wall are becoming stretched and under some degree of pressure. And sometimes in some women, the midline connective tissue can stretch more than others. Now, what I'd like to highlight at this point is that we do need to, in some respect, normalize some separation during pregnancy, because 100% of women will have some degree of separation towards the very end of pregnancy. And that makes sense. It's a little bit of give in order to allow our abdominal wall to do that stretch that, you know, it's so unimaginable when you think about it. It's actually wonderful that our bodies are able to do this. So we need that little bit of give. And naturally, after having a baby, that usually resolves. So in about two-thirds of women, we know that without having to ever even think of diastasis or consider it or address it, that it generally just reduces back towards normal.
Absolutely.
In one-third of women, unfortunately, there's ongoing separation, and it can be an issue, and it's not just cosmetic. Now, usually women realize that they have abdominal separation, like you said, because they're doing exercise and they're addressing the abdomen, but their tummy's not reducing. And usually it's the aesthetical component or the look of it that targets or that raises awareness to a woman, because let's be real, we all want our tummy to go down after having a baby. That's normal. It's just our women, just part of being a woman.
Yeah, being asked if you're pregnant when you're not anymore is not a fun experience to go through.
No, it's not. And there's no shame in wanting your tummy to go down. I've had four kids. Of course, I've always wanted my tummy to go down after having pregnancy. And full disclosure, I don't have diastasis, but I would say just generally my connective tissue and just my muscle lengths with repeated stretching are definitely, they've definitely got a bit more residual length than that. I probably don't have as flat a tummy as I want to have, yet I don't have separation yet. So there's a degree of just even all the connective tissue and muscles in our abdominal wall stretching, which I think is important for women to understand as well.
Yes.
But what you highlighted about function, so generally women come to my clinic because they don't like the look of their tummy and they're aware that physiotherapy might help, which is great. But we are aware from both my clinical practice and the research that there are functional implications. So it's usually that sit-up style action, that rectus abdominis function that's compromised, and rotational movements. So we know that they can be compromised in people who have diastasis. And that has a huge knock-on effect, because if women are not able to utilize their abdominal wall function to the full degree that they should be able to use it, they're going to have to compensate with their abdominal muscles and their strategies of how they do certain things. They may have to scale back on exercise types that they previously enjoyed. It just can have this knock-on effect on your future overall physical and mental well-being moving forward. So I think it's so important to address.
Yes, and I love as well. So yes, basically, and for people who are listening who don't know much about, you know, physical therapy, so twisting motion is harder, getting up out of bed. But there's a lot that we do functionally that involves our core. And if you've not built back that core or that deep core, there's a whole lot that's compromised. Holding your children, right, can be harder when you have a weak core. All sorts of things during the day. So we want you guys to be able to know how to build that back and how to build it back safely. The good news is that's what we do, right? So that's our job, is to help you know how to train those muscles and to get things stronger. And with that also does come a flatter, kind of tighter stomach. Like you said, it's never going to be exactly the same, more than likely, because you did make a human and you did a really cool thing with your body. But there's a lot that we can do both for your function. Also, like you'd said, back pain. There's also research that's shown that if you have diastasis, which you said 30% of moms might, that it affects so many other things, and you're more, would you agree that research has shown that it increases the likelihood of other pelvic floor dysfunction as well?
So this is a huge interest of mine in terms of what diastasis can and cannot predispose us to. And I have a lot of debates with colleagues who are equally interested in diastasis as to whether we can make those claims. The research is quite mixed and conflicting at times, with some studies demonstrating correlation and other ones totally challenging any correlation. But what we do know is definitely the incidence of having diastasis and having back pain or having diastasis and having some degree of pelvic floor dysfunction, most likely in terms of prolapse or pelvic organ prolapse, they definitely are at higher risk when we have diastasis. But that doesn't mean, what we don't know from the research yet is whether diastasis caused that or whether it's just two things that are likely to exist together. So there's more research certainly to be done. But the physiotherapist and my clinical reasoning process would make me think that it makes sense. If you have an abdominal wall that isn't functioning to the best that it should be, and you are having to compensate and you're changing how you move or how you recruit the abdominal wall, you may be putting pressure on the pelvic floor area. So that may be an area that picks up some of the slack. So over time, that may predispose you to increased pelvic floor symptoms or dysfunction. And in terms of back pain, if your abdominal wall, again, isn't strong enough and isn't able to do what it needs to do, it makes sense that we, as moms who are lifting, twisting, lifting car seats and children into cars, all lifting day. Shopping, it makes sense all day. It makes sense that our risk for back pain may be heightened. And we know that back pain in the general population, irrespective of diastasis, is quite high, is a high prevalence. Some degree in our life, at some stage in our life, we're going to have back pain. And it's just the fact that if we add in this extra circumstance of muscles not being used as well as they should, or moms not knowing how to move as well as they should, that we can then predispose ourselves to even more back pain.
Yes, absolutely. I know I never had back pain before I had diastasis. And luckily I've been able to work on that a lot, but I still have moments, you know, because I healed it from 6 to 1, but the depth is still there if I'm not actively engaging my TA.
Yes.
So let's talk about one of the things I loved that you mentioned in the webinar that I was a part of is kind of getting away from only looking at the width of the diastasis. So what, of course, we mean by that is to test for ab separation, all you mamas. If I have it on my YouTube channel, Heal at Home Moms, but there's a lot of resources out there for that. But laying on your back, putting the hands kind of at that belly button or above and below, and doing a crunch and kind of feeling for a space between those six-pack abs. But something I love is also looking into depth. So do you want to go a little bit more into that?
So when we're assessing, just as you said, it's not just about the actual width or how many finger widths you can fit in that gap. That's part of the picture, yes, and we do want to know how wide it is. But the connective tissue that I talk about in between the rectus abdominis muscles, that linea alba, it actually has a depth to it as well. And when I described the definition of diastasis, I talked about the thinning and widening of the linea alba. And that's important because as it thins, some women end up with a really sort of deep separation between their abdominal muscles, whereas other women may have the same width of separation, but they have a really shallow gap or separation. And I find that the depth is particularly important because for load transfer, I actually think we're better to have, I think the depth is one of the most important elements in order to get load across that abdominal wall. Yes. So I want anyone who is having a feel of their tummy to think about it in terms of, yes, how many finger widths, but also what does it feel like as you move down the abdominal wall at the midline from, say, your sternum or your pubic bone to your pubic bone? Are you feeling any differences in the depth as you move down from the top to the bottom of your gap?
Yeah, and I also love, it's not typical practice here, at least I can speak for the like Southeast, to measure the depth, at least not, I know that in the webinar I saw with you, you actually have like a little finger glove that like measures the depth with like a ruler basically. And I think that's wonderful because people like seeing progress and we of course measure the width.
Yeah,
and I know,
absolutely. People want.
Oh. Yeah, yeah. I mean, and I know that I look at the depth, but I don't measure it with like, you know, actual like centimeters or millimeters. But that's a great thing to start adding that I want to change in my practice just because it gives us more objective information that both I and the patient can look at and be like, okay, we're, you know, because the depth is extremely important. So I love that you mentioned that.
In diastasis, what I find is that, and as you will know from having your own lived experience, diastasis rehabilitation can be quite slow. And, you know, we want to see changes overnight, but it's not going to happen when it comes to diastasis. So women need to have the encouragement and motivation and those things, those small gains to make them keep focused. And if you're, so you might, I might have someone coming back to me who has, say, a 6 finger width gap. And we start rehab and we start loading them to try and get that connective tissue, stimulating some collagen regeneration, getting some change. And they might come back and their gap might still be 6 finger widths the next day, but there might be a change in that depth, which is a win, which mm-hmm. is a progression. And that woman needs to hear that in order to go, okay, this is not all a waste of time. We're starting to load this. We're starting to see a change.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's great. I think another thing people get confused about in the rehab, and something that you mentioned in the webinar was when the width based on the contraction of the rectus versus the transverse abdominis and how that changes.
Yes.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So what we know is, first of all, there's a couple of points there to talk about. And this is why women may find that they get told they have a different width gap depending on different professionals they may go to. And it's not that anyone is particularly wrong, but the actual method in which we assess diastasis is quite hard to standardize. So we talk about putting the hand in and feeling with finger widths and doing a crunch or a lifting the head off the surface to feel the rectus abdominis muscles. But when we do that, those rectus abdominis muscles generally approximate or come together to some degree. Now, some people measure the width as what it is when you're in that crunch situation, but realistically, we don't walk around all day with the rectus abdominis muscles contracted. And so it's not a reflective measurement of our width on a daily basis. So what I tend to do is have a feel of when we do the head lift and get the rectus abdominis muscles recruited. But then I tend to let the head back and try to follow the muscle borders back out to where they go at rest. Mm. So that's the measurement I like to take. So we've touched on that rectus abdominis. When we do that sit up and recruit rectus abdominis, the muscles come together. So the interactive distance is going to be smaller.
Yeah.
When we recruit our deep core muscle, which is, some people may have heard of the transverse abdominis muscle before, and that's one of our deeper muscles. And it's a really important muscle in our just core function, basically. But when we recruit it, it's like a corset going round from the front of our abdomen round back to the spine. And when we recruit it, it actually causes a tensioning at our abdomen. And with that, we may see some slight increase in our interactive distance or the gap, or it may stay the same when we then do a head lift or chin to chest. And that's okay. So it's not all about being fearful of the gap not changing, because sometimes the tension is actually more important. And when it comes to rehab, the tensioning and then loading of the abdominal wall is where you'll see the biggest gains.
Yes. So I think a really important point, because I know I've even had many patients that, so what we do in the clinic or with online program is teach you how to activate that TA and how to engage it. And then you build mm-hmm. that stabilization. And then often we progress to safely. I always tell people, like, progressing into the other activities, ideally when you can control it, or if you feel like you hit a plateau, and then we move into function, right? But so the idea there is you might tense your TA like your therapist has taught you, and then do a crunch, and you feel like that gap widens a little bit, and basically mm-hmm. that's okay as long as you're keeping the tension across the gap. And I always tell people it feels like a trampoline, kind of. So you should have a little rebound there.
Absolutely. And what you tend to find with that, when that does happen, for anyone who has some degree of depth to their gap or to the linea alba, you tend to find that when you have tensioned that linea alba, even if the gap is slightly wider, it should feel less deeper. It should feel more shallow and have that springiness that you talk about. So that's ideal.
So question, as someone with myself, when I crunch, right now I'm down to 1 finger width, but there is significant depth if I'm not actively trying to brace. And then if mm-hmm. I brace, it might be 2 finger widths, but it has really good tension. Would you say one is better than the other for practicing like rectus abdominis strengthening? So like crunches and traditional ab work?
Yes, I would say that you're actually better to go with the TA tensioning, which, yes, there's widening of that interactive distance while you do the exercise, but you're loading it better. So the way I describe it is Like if we think of resistance band, do you know, like I call it TheraBand. I'm sure you'd have that. Do you know resistance band? Yeah.
We say the same thing.
If you think, oh, good. Okay. So if you have that there and you have a piece of resistance band, because I think it's nice and stretchy and it kind of is that trampoline type feeling. So ideally we want nice taut TheraBand. Mm-hmm. But if we take off the slack, the TheraBand will kind of start to ripple or kind of fold in on itself. And if you try to think of that in terms of which would be better for transferring load or forces across it, of course, it's going to be the one that's tensioned.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
That's the same sort of principle. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great explanation. All right. So, yes. So basically kind of thinking differently about when we test ab separation. And I feel like this is so good for everybody to know, because I'm all about trying to equip moms to know more about themselves. And I think that a lot of the patients I'm seeing now are doing such a great job looking into things on their own and coming up with really wonderful questions, and which is great, because the whole point of this podcast and what I do online is trying to help equip people to be able to take their health into their own hands and know who to go to and how to do it, and all of that good
healthcare
stuff.
Healthcare empowerment, absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit about one of the big things with diastasis is fear of exercise. And because a lot of people don't have someone in their area who's really well equipped to treat this, unfortunately, hence all of our online work, right? Or trying to equip more physical therapists.
Yeah.
So a lot of people are like, okay, I read that crunches are not good for me right now necessarily. So what do I don't think I can do anything. I'm afraid to exercise. And I know one of the research studies you'd mentioned was that you actually found that running could be more beneficial, or like what types of exercise do you recommend for people to kind of help empower them to be able to go back into some exercise safely?
Okay, so this is a really good question, and it's one I'm so glad you brought up, because and believe me, I've been everywhere. I've been in swings and roundabouts, which a lot of us in healthcare professions, we advance as the research advances. So I was way back, so 10 years ago, I was at a stage where I did think certain exercises were probably best to be avoided with diastasis, and more kind of your basic Pilates and TA activation were the go-tos. Mm-hmm. But I want to put a good message out there to all women and healthcare professionals listening that really what we know about diastasis now has, while there's a lot more research needed, we have enough to demonstrate that there really is no such thing as a bad exercise. So we need to be getting rid of that sort of dialogue and putting that message out there, because it is putting a lot of confusion and a lot of conflicting messages out there to women. And we're doing them a disservice by doing that. We know that exercise is so important. So if we strip it back and not even think about diastasis and think about postnatal women, we need to be getting our 150 minutes of exercise per week. And that's for all sort of kind of health and government guidelines across different countries, because we know the physical and mental health benefits that physical activity has overall. Women then suddenly have diastasis and either look up online or access a care provider who maybe doesn't know as much about diastasis. And so they get told, oh, you better not exercise, you better not do this, or you can't go to that class. And suddenly it becomes more difficult for women to engage and to meet those exercise targets, which is going to have a huge implication on their overall health and well-being.
Yeah.
So what we need to do is exactly what you're aiming to do, is arm women with the information to know themselves what they can and can't do. And the beauty of this is that basically having an idea that, right, okay, you have a bit of abdominal separation, and we know that pressure management is a huge part of diastasis and whether it's going to progress or get worse. And pressure management means during day-to-day activities, during exercise. So if we're doing a crunch, sometimes we might think of that as quite a high-pressured activity in the abdomen. And a lot of women find that their abdomen domes, or they get that coning or that weird shape at the midline, which is often indicative of diastasis.
Yeah.
So my advice would be, if you're doing any activities that are causing quite excessive doming or coning, it's probably a good idea to scale back from those for now. It's not a case that you'll never be able to do them, but scale back from those and start doing exercises where you can recruit your pelvic floor and TA and get that tension, and say do a head lift or do Pilates-based exercises or do more functional upright exercises without seeing any doming, and increase the load and intensity of those and then revisit some of the exercises that cause doming again. Or ideally, if anyone is in a position to access someone who's trained in diastasis, go and get evaluated so that they can guide you properly. But there's no such thing as a bad exercise. So I even get people, like if women want to plank, I'm getting them back planking if they have the right strategy in place to manage that tension. And you mentioned running there, and running, there was a study actually only recently out, which I quite liked. It followed women with diastasis up to, I think, 2 years. It was only a small group of women now, so it was, you know, that did lower some of what we can take from the study. But they didn't. Yeah, so they found that the women who were running were actually making improvements alongside a core training program. And they were making improvements in their diastasis, which one demonstrated that running didn't impact or didn't slow down or didn't prevent them from improving their diastasis. And two, it was one of very few studies that we have out there that follow women that far.
That long.
Postnatal, because usually a lot of our evidence is, most of our evidence is based on women immediately postpartum or up to 6 months, which doesn't tell us a lot, because in a woman who doesn't have diastasis, who has had a baby, we know that at 12 months after having a baby, there's still changes in that rectus abdominis muscle fibers. You know, there's still changes that they're recovering from, which is just a normal, natural process. So we need to start thinking of the longer game of rehab and normalizing that idea of a longer game, because poor women, including myself, we're all subject to social media where we have snapback figures and celebrities in bikinis a day after delivering. And it's just putting so much pressure and unrealistic expectations on women. And I look at my daughter and think, gosh, what sort of world is she growing up in? What sort of body image expectations is she going to have? Mm. But I have a funny story to tell on that, actually, because I had my fourth baby, as I said, there last August, and my eldest is six, and then I have a four-year-old.
Yeah, so that's close together. Them,
oh, yeah, so six, four, two, and then the youngest one is now coming nearly 10 months. So they're all close together, and the older two are at a really good age, really interesting, best friends, kind of, they go about together, and they're starting to have conversations. So Rory, my oldest son, he turned to Emily and said, he turned to Emily and he goes, Emily, do you remember during the last summer holidays, mommy had a baby still in her tummy? So I was tuning in to listen to this. I thought it was very funny. And Emily was like, yeah. And then he goes, and she doesn't have one now, and her tummy, and she doesn't have a big belly anymore. So I was all kind of thinking, oh, this is great. I was chuffed to hear this. And Emily, my daughter, turned around and goes, no, she still does have a bit of a tummy. That's okay. That doesn't go down straight away. Now, first of all, I was like horrified, kind of like, oh my gosh, she said I still have a tummy. I do still have a tummy. And then I kind of thought about it and was like, you know what? That's the right message.
That's so good.
The innocence of a child who is already learning, actually, it's okay. She has a tummy still, but that's normal because she just had a baby. And what I also liked about it was that she was talking to Rory, who's a boy, because I think it's the boy's expectations of body image that we need to change too, because he's starting to learn, oh, right, okay, so that just doesn't go down straight away. Yeah. Okay. So it's just new norms.
Yes, we had that talk. I'm one of those people who, and it might be partially my diastasis, but I think it's partially as well just the way that my body responded after baby. It usually took me 9 months to get back into my clothes, and trying to give myself my body time. I think probably 3 or 4 months after I had my last one, a sweet family we're so close to in the neighborhood, their little boys who are 5 and 7 did come up to me in the park and they were like, you had a baby. And I was like, yes, here he is. And they were like, why do you still look like you have why does it still look like you have a belly, basically, was their question. Yeah, like, why does it still look?
And shock horror.
I know. And to be honest, like, my first response was like, you little punk, you know? But no, honestly, it was really good again, because I was like, well, that's what happens. Like, it doesn't go away immediately. Like, my body is still changing, and it's only been a few months, and this is me, you know? So, like you said, I think it's really good. Yeah. And I've tried to also – I have two – my oldest two are daughters, and – I have tried to, for instance, when I exercise sometimes in my sports bra, because I like them seeing me and asking changes and asking about changes and just all those things, and also letting them know that while I'm always trying to improve my health and, you know, the way I feel like I look, I'm doing so in a healthy way and in a way that still loves my body as it is and appreciating what it's done for me. So trying to keep away any negative talk about that kind of stuff, you know.
I love that.
But rather, yeah, if they ask, I have a hernia in my belly button, and they ask about it sometimes, and I'm like, that's, you know, kind of a boo-boo that I got from carrying you guys in my tummy, but that's okay. And, you know, we're going to get it fixed one day. And, but we kind of talked through that I would do it again. And this is great. So, but yes, so exercise. So with running, I feel like that's a great point. I liked hearing that research about running and how some study found that it could actually even be helpful. I know that for me, I really liked hearing that because for me, after my second child, when my diastasis was at its worst, I tried to train for a half marathon to, honestly, I'm embarrassed to say it, but looking back, I wanted to kind of help motivate myself to lose the baby weight. And I didn't go about it very well, which is just a good example that we don't always practice what we preach. And I started training before I'd spent enough time working on my deep core and other surrounding muscle strength. And so for me, looking back, running long distances when my body wasn't ready for it worsened my diastasis. But once I spent time working on my strengthening and my deep core and just building up enough strength to support my body for running, I did really well. So it's just a nice thing, kind of bringing back the whole moral of the story when it comes to strengthening with diastasis and healing. It's really not this is wrong or this is right. It's what is your body able to handle and what can you control?
Yes.
Like you said, the same thing for we actually teach people, we teach mom planks all the time, and planks are one of the things people say not to do. I always say it may not be a good idea if you've had no education on the matter and you have no control, but if you, as you learn to have control, we want to teach you how to get back to everything, as long as you're equipped and safe to do it, right?
Yeah. And I think the key message is that there's no one program for every woman out there for diastasis. Every woman's individual because it depends on her unique circumstances. And it depends on, does she just have diastasis or does she also have diastasis and some pelvic floor issues? Does she have some other pre-existing health concerns that she had before even getting pregnant? And what is it that she's looking to get back to? Because the rehab for the day-to-day mom is going to be different to the rehab for an elite athlete looking to get back to high-performance sport. So there's so much to talk about there. But I actually have, and we can I can send you the link afterwards as well. I co-authored Returning to Running Postnatal Guidelines, which are really applicable for getting back to any sort of exercise, but it was running that we focused the research on. And we recently published a paper on them in the BJSM a few weeks ago.
Wonderful.
So they've finally started to get into, so chuffed, they've got into kind of mainstream academia so we can start to change healthcare, because unless you get it into black and white print, it's not going to make a difference. They're actually applicable for moms themselves to read. So while we made them for health and fitness professionals, we have so many moms who read them that now I actually send a lot of my clients to go and download them and read them before their next session. But they provide a lot of information about the changes with pregnancy and afterwards, and the different changes with dependent delivery mode. And they talk about the recovery process that's needed, and they give an idea of load and impact tests that we can put ourselves through to,
wonderful,
I suppose, assess our readiness. And there's a section on diastasis within the guidelines, so I'll send you the link to that afterwards as well, because it's free to access.
That's absolutely wonderful. Thank you. That'd be great. So, and I know that's the thing, there is no black and white, and people always ask me for black and white. So assuming someone has some pelvic floor dysfunction and some diastasis, let's assume they might, do you have a general guideline as to when you recommend they can start high impact exercise postpartum? Like, how far out would you recommend before they go back into high impact?
Yeah, so basically, that's a really good question, aligning with the guidelines that we put out. We usually recommend that on an average basis, a normal woman recovering postnatal will probably be best placed to wait until 12 weeks postnatal before they consider going into high impact exercise. But it's not for going to from doing nothing to suddenly a high impact.
Absolutely.
You're using those 12 weeks to grade up and to build up and to train the muscles that are going to be really important in supporting you when it comes to high impact.
Yes.
And it's to try to slow down, because I know myself, like, we're all raring to go and get back into fitness and you've been pregnant, you know, it's taken the last 10 months of your life and you're ready to start finding you again. And I get it. But I think we have a duty to inform women of the risk factors of rushing back too soon in terms of pelvic floor dysfunction and perhaps abdominal wall and diastasis. Like you said, you found that without doing the core training, when you went back running, it worsened your diastasis. So it's given that information to women so that they can make informed choices. Some women will go back and hit the streets running anyway because that's her coping strategy and they need to. And that's okay as long as you know the information and you're
making
happy
a choice
to make that decision.
Yeah.
Totally. I'm all for informed choices. But the thing is that it's not a case of 12 weeks and that's the magic number. We've used the evidence to guide where we think on average women are best placed in terms of the healing process. But some women will be healed from 8 weeks because they've had a really straightforward delivery, mm-hmm. they've good connective tissue and genetics. They're, you know, they're eating well, they're sleeping well. There's other factors feeding into them being ready to run sooner. Whereas other women may get to 12 weeks and find, gosh, even when they run, they've got a leaky bladder or they've pain or pressure down below. And if you're getting symptoms while back at any sort of high impact exercise, whether that's leaking, whether that's having backup, that's a sign that you're not managing the load of that exercise and that you need to. So I always try to make both the general public and health and fitness professionals out there start to think about pelvic health issues more like we think about sports injuries. So if you take a sports injury, they have an injury, say an ACL injury, they get the surgery, they take the time to recover, and then there's a graded rehabilitation program, and then there's a stage of return to play testing, and that's where they go onto the field and start doing drills. But if they're getting niggles or they're getting any symptoms, they back it up and they do more rehab. They don't just push on.
Yeah.
Women have babies, and the next thing it's back to porridge. They're lifting laundry baskets. They've got other kids. They've got them on hip. They're doing a multitude of things.
Yeah.
I think we have to really start thinking about the huge physical changes going on in a woman's body. When we are pregnant, we are amazing in what our bodies do. But we have to think about the recovery process and ensure we're optimizing it too. So general rule of thumb, 12 weeks. But a really good idea for anyone out there, whether you're before 12 weeks or after 12 weeks, try some of the load and impact tests in the guideline we'll share, because they give you a really good indication of whether you're ready. So if you pass them with no symptoms, you can it gives you the confidence to think, right, you can go ahead. If they highlight some symptoms, it might mean that you either need to do more rehab or you need to access a physical therapist or a postnatal trainer of some degree so that you can start to get targeted rehab.
Yeah. So here in so I think the key of what you're saying for sure for everyone listening is, before we get it back into high impact, we need to be doing some prehab. That basically means retraining your core, building up gradually to that activity. I know a lot of people, they get their 6-week clearance from the doctor, and the first thing they do is they go back running and lifting and doing like heavy stuff. And so that's what we would really like people to stop doing, just because we want you to get back to it safely, and you're going to be at a much higher chance of being able to do all these things safely if you do it the right way. So I love that you have some objective stuff for them to be able to try. I know I have times where I've had some, we have an online program that we recommend just because I wish every person was sent to a pelvic floor physical therapist after they have a baby. In America, that's definitely not the case. I'm hoping to help change that by some of the things that we're doing. But in the meantime, we have an online 8-week program because I feel like that would at least be so much better than the alternative, which is how so many of them have nothing. But so I always like to recommend like a transition period of learning how to strengthen your deep core and pelvic floor leading up to re-entering other activity. But yes, I've had patients or people online write me and they're like, I feel like these exercises starting out are too easy. I'm a runner. And I'm like, well, why are you wanting to rehab these muscles? You know, what is it for you? And they're like, well, I leak a lot when I run. I'm like, well, then we need to take some steps back to fix the muscles so that you can do that without. But, you know, that seems counterintuitive. They're like, I run 10 miles a day. Why do I need to do these easier exercises, right? And so it's kind of educating and rethinking the way that we think about our body and even exercise sometimes.
But also in terms of thinking about, so some women are, you know, they do have a pretty good time and a good recovery. And some women listening to this will be like, gosh, I don't even know what they're talking about because I had a baby and I have no issues and I hit the pavement at 2 weeks and I've never had an issue. And I still want those women to be listening to this advice, because the reason we are taking this approach to kind of making sure that you do the prehab before you go back to high impact exercise is more in relation to making it achievable for you to maintain high impact exercise and physical activity long term. Because as time goes on, we can start to develop pelvic health issues that weren't just there at the front line initially, and that your muscles and connective tissue was just about supporting function, but then suddenly you might find a year later or 2 years or 3 years later that you're getting some. Or it may be even further down the line as we enter perimenopausal sort of phase of life when our tissues start to change. And I'm turning 35 in July, and that makes me I'm entering perimenopause in a couple of months' time. How scary is that? Like, you know, people always think menopause is older, but perimenopause starts at age 35. So we need to start understanding that and understanding what that means for our bodies, and starting to take the precautions to safeguard and protect our long-term ability to exercise.
Yes, being proactive instead of just reactive, right?
Totally.
Absolutely. I love it. And so also for all of you, I know we have a lot of physical therapists that follow us as well. Wanted to make sure you guys knew that that you have, I want them to know that you have an online diastasis course that we'll put the link through the website. And I personally, I've already done some of your stuff, but I would also like to do this as well. I know even through the webinar, I learned new things. It's really hard to come across really wonderful education for diastasis. And I think that you accomplished that. So I'd highly recommend it.
Thank you so much.
Yes, of course. And we will put that link below in the podcast. And then we'll also tag you with that as well. So
I appreciate that.
Thank you for sharing your knowledge for physical therapists, for mamas, for everybody. So hopefully we can change the way people think about this and what they know about it, so that we can get a lot of people healthier and having brighter futures.
Yes, and I love what you're doing and this platform for putting good information out there. So I appreciate the opportunity to come on and to connect. And yeah, let's change the future. And especially, let's make sure that the next generation coming up know more about pelvic health and have a totally different outlook on it than even what it currently exists now. So it's just, there's a huge drive there for change, and I think we're going to get there bit by bit, but it's all these things that help.
Yes, amen. Thank you so much for being on here, and I hope you have a great day.
You too. Thank you.
Bye. Thanks so much for listening. If you have any physical therapy questions for us, find us on Facebook or Instagram. Feel free to send us messages, or also visit us at healathomemoms.com, and we'll see you next time.